These guys have high aspirations. They are compelled. They're not committed or compliant. They're compelled. So it's our jobs to be like, dude, let's rock. You want to train 6 days a week? I'm here. Let's go.
Let's go.
You
know?
Basketball players and want to take their health and performance to the next level, you're going to love this episode. Matt Aldred is in his sixth season at Furman and was promoted to assistant head coach and director of basketball health and performance in August of 2023. Beyond basketball, Matt also handles the strength and conditioning programs for men's golf and men's and women's cross country. But let's be honest, this show is all about hoops. Today, we're going to cover why Matt's focused on individualizing programs in the buckets he uses to group his basketball players, how to manage and improve the performance of fascially driven athletes, and in one of my favorite segments, we discuss the role and implementation of drop landings into his programs. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll jump into this awesome new episode with Matt Aldred. Today's episode of the Physical Preparation Podcast is brought to you by Hawken Dynamics. Hawken Dynamics consider themselves part of the process, not the process. Force plates are in no way, shape, or form new technology, but Hawken has brought them to the 21st century. Hawken Dynamics plates are wireless, which makes them portable and easy to set up and use. You'll have the ability to performance test your athletes in a matter of seconds and give them immediate feedback on their strengths and weaknesses. And last but not least, their software interface is clean, intuitive, and easy on the eye, so both you and your athletes can visualize what's going on and how to improve their performance. Now, the reason I invested in Hawken Dynamics force plates was simple. I was tired of feelings and subjective information being the sole driver of my decision-making process. At this point in my career, I want a blend of both subjective assessments and objective-driven metrics to drive my program design. I love the idea of having dual force plates so you can see side-to-side differences and asymmetries, especially in athletes who are in the return-to-play process. I want to be able to collect and track data across the athletic spectrum, from our young kiddos to my elite athletes that are playing in the NBA or MLS. Another driver for me was finding ways to assess performance that aren't reliant on lifting technique. While I would never bring a kid in and test their 1RM squat or deadlift on day one, I have zero issue putting them on force plates to test their power in a vertical jump or their force output in a mid-thigh pull or ISO squat. But arguably the biggest driver for me was being able to take all of this technology and making it incredibly easy to use. With options to lease or buy, coupled with a 5-year warranty, I'm confident that Hawken Dynamics force plates can take your performance facility to the next level. To learn more, head over to hawkendynamics.com or follow them on Instagram at Hawken Dynamics. Or for direct sales inquiries, feel free to reach out to Drake Berberet directly at Drake@HawkenDynamics.com or follow him on Instagram at strength2.speed. Matt, man, thank you so much for coming on the show today. New dad, you got a few things going on in life, so I appreciate the time. Would you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I'm from England. I've been out here in the States since 2015 as a college strength coach. My sixth year, I've just finished at Furman. Yeah, I was a college athlete 3 years in England, 2 years in America for soccer. So the real football, I would say. I should have said football.
Yeah.
And Division II school, West Florida, went home, played professional for a year and then semi-professional. And I was a personal trainer for a while back in England and I really enjoyed it. But I wanted to kind of work with athletes that were driven, motivated and wanted to be their best. And I felt like there was could have been a sweet spot with the college age as well, how you can impact these young men and women. So I feel I just had a calling to come back to the States. So I came back, got a grad assistant role at Alabama Huntsville, was a year with Florida as an assistant strength coach with men's basketball, women's basketball. I had men's tennis as my lead sport, which was kind of cool as an English guy with tennis in Wimbledon. That was a great time.
Yeah.
And got to assist two really good basketball programs and got to kind of be exposed to high major basketball and really fell in love with the game. That was my first exposure of Division I basketball. And I was like, this is cool. Fast-paced game, big buy-in for the weight room. And then I got hired at Furman. Men's and women's basketball. Now it's men's basketball, men's golf, and then I oversee cross country and track and field. So I've just finished up 6 years here at Furman, Greenville, South Carolina. Got a really supportive head coach. Love the campus, love the community, love the city. My wife and I got married here 2 years ago. So yeah, I feel very blessed. I'm in a great spot.
Yeah, I love it. Dude, you glossed over the soccer. Actually, let's say football. Let's say football. You passed over the football career, man. What position did you play?
I played center midfield, so I did a lot of running, okay. Which I think ties in well to my okay. affinity for game day runs at the moment.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. I really, as a young man, you have aspirations to be a professional. I was able to do that. Randomly enough, it was within a United States League, so USL yeah. professional league.
Yeah,
but I was actually in Antigua, so I played in Antigua, and every away game was a flight to Miami and then a flight to different places in the States. So I did that for a year, had great okay. fun. Got to live in the Caribbean for a little bit. Grew me a lot as a man. Grew me a lot as a yeah. person. Really did. Different environment, different culture. And then I went home for a couple of years, played semi-pro, personal trainer. And then I've come back out to the States. And college sport, there's nothing like it in the world, in the yeah. American system. It really isn't. So I feel very fortunate to be in it and to be contributing, hopefully, pretty well.
For sure. For sure. Okay, so talk to me. What got you started in the world of physical prep? What got you into the weight room and kind of got you into this whole side of things?
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like when I was younger, I really had an affinity to, like, this kind of sounds really like weird, but like men's health magazines and men's fitness.
Oh, okay.
Like I got a twin brother, so we'd always be competing with fitness, running up hills, preseason. We would run to preseason for like 30 minutes. We'd run there, do the preseason conditioning, and then run back. I don't know what it was, but we loved it. We absolutely loved it. I live in a beautiful place in England, Eastbourne. Beautiful countryside. So I think that, and then I had a lot of friends and like teammates kind of asking me health questions. I don't know. I've always kind of kept in shape. I've always kind of not really delved into alcohol and all that. I've always been pretty lean and pretty in good shape. And so I think that my curiosity for learning would help others. And then, like I say, when I was a D2 athlete, I loved the environment of that weight room at West Florida. I just feel like every time I was in there, those guys would be eating or like working out, and the music would always be blaring, and the weight room had a cool vibe. I was like, that's their office. I was like, that's insane.
Yeah.
If they're not training, they're chilling, watching training videos, or like, it's brilliant. And so I feel like that really, after I was a personal trainer and had trained, say, average Joes for a little bit, I was like, I think I want to. And I've always tried to train athletes, so local football players in my hometown, love the Olympics, love all the great rugby, cricket, football. Loved all that in England. And just kind of the physical prep kind of led from there. And like I say, it's a very respected position here as well, strength and conditioning coach. You are a member of staff, you have full benefits, you can get paid really well. And it's just fun, man. Like, I have an office, and essentially if I don't work out in the day, like, this is tough, man, because the weight room's right there. But I love helping others to get their physical best, and everything I read, everything I learn, everything I try and be a sponge with is to help others reach their goals. Because I'm 34, I'm done, I'm not playing anymore, but like, the joy I have to see a team win, and if a physical characteristic maybe helped that, or if a big dunk or fatigue didn't come into play for us, but it did for the other team and we won. I don't know, just the buzz I get from seeing others succeed. I think that's what servant leaders enjoy, and as strength and conditioning coaches, we are essentially servant leaders. I think that's why we do this. We don't want to be front and center. At least we shouldn't.
Yeah. And even if you do, I think if you stick around long enough, you realize you shouldn't be front and center, and have this tendency to kind of fall into the background and just realize your role is different. You've had your time to be front and center. Now it's time to step back and let somebody else do that.
Yeah, we work in the weeds and work in the shadows, and I love it. I've never played for Furman. We would suck if I did. So I just want to coach them, like, seriously, while I coach them, hey guys, go play. If I can see something out there that I think we can manipulate and change as a training variable and improvement, but like, I'm going to watch the sport, I'm going to learn the sport, I'm going to absorb myself in it, getting right involved in the culture, ask you questions as an athlete about how you feel you play. Does this work? Does this feel right? Hey, do it how you want to do this exercise. This is what I see, a step back through, do it how you want to do it. So I think, just being an English guy, different background, I do think that's helped me with basketball. Now, someone could argue the same way. If I played the sport, yes, it helped, but I got no blind spots. I got no previous history of playing, so it's kind of an open book for me.
I love it. I love it. So one thing that we talked about, because we went back and forth a lot before the show, we talked about individualizing training. And I know this is something we're both passionate about. What got you passionate about individualizing training and getting away from a lot of like cookie cutter stuff that I feel like a lot of people tend to default to throughout their career?
It's funny, is in talk about strength and conditioning industry, is when you start out, you have a lot of teams, you got loads of athletes, and then as you become more of an expert, you have less athletes. So you essentially get paid more for working with less athletes. Yeah. So in my mind, it's like you get, so even if you work with football, you're going to work with other teams as a young coach, then you just have football. But now it's like, if I've only got 12 scholarship athletes, my breadth of understanding and expertise for them has to be big. It has to be. Like, I get hate for this. I can't just go, right, he's a big, he's a traditional big, he's a traditional point guard. Let's train them the same way. Like, that to me is a complete disservice to them. It's lazy. It's not optimal. It's not what I want to be about. It's not what my coaching staff believe in. It's not what's expected of me. And it's not what the best people in the industry do, who I look up to and respect. And so it's, for me, it's just like a no-brainer. Like, how can I individualize as best I can for these athletes to get them to best, to get them to optimal? And so as you start to look at that, and as we start to kind of look at our force plate data, their anthropometrics, their archetypes, their subjective, what they tell me, what the coach tells me about them, how I see them play, how I see game film, how I see weaknesses. Think about the water bucket with things leaking out. Like, to me, it's fun. It's a puzzle. It's like, how creative can I be? How can I maximize their superpower? And then how can I raise their weakness? Because I don't want to like not train the superpower and lose that by just getting them bigger and faster and stronger. Like, they need to keep that. So it's fun. And I've been, like I say, been here 6 years. I've had some athletes for 5 years. They've graduated. One's now two-way in the NBA, which is awesome. And then I've got some guys coming back here that I would have trained for 4 years. I've got to make it as individualized and best as I can for them. But also, I don't want to get bored. I don't know. Let's do the same program. Like, Mike Boyle talks about it. Your program was even really good 10 years ago, or something's got to change. And I don't want to get stale. I want to keep adapting, keep evolving. And that's where some of the things we'll probably talk about have come in and have made a real difference.
Yeah. So let's dive in, because I want to hear more about this. We're both in the basketball space. Let's just start really broadly. Like, what buckets do you use? Because I know you do it a little bit different than I've seen in the past, and I like that. So I'd love to hear just bucketing for starters, and then we can kind of drill down from there.
Yeah, it's multifactorial. I'd say the most recent bucket I've done is if you're more muscle dominant or fascia dominant, and then you've got hybrids in the middle. So if you think about fascia dominant, going to be traditionally more of a point guard, leaner, tenderness, not particularly a weight room warrior. I can never say that. More skill focused. The wing athletes are going to be kind of the NBA right now. 6'7", positionless, quick, explosive. They're the wings. And then the bigs, traditional bigs, like Steven Adams, Lopez. So I would initially go, right, who are these guys coming in? What position are they? And then based on, so that's definitely a bucket. Muscle, fascia, hybrid, the positional needs, how they play. And then really it's an assessment of the force plate metrics to see if that aligns with it, to see what their KPIs are in terms of their superpowers, in terms of their weaknesses, comparing that to previous players, comparing that to previous freshmen, looking at they've got 3 years of historical data, maybe four now. So it's like, how can I improve that over time? And then really with that article that you're alluding to, the Sportsmith one, it really kind of got my engines going when I thought about, I had this athlete that had been with me for say 4 years, strong as anything, strong. Hey, can you go up? Yeah, I can go up. Every time. Is that heavy? Yeah. I can go up a little bit. Blimmin' heck, I don't need you to go up more than 225 as a 5'10" point guard. I don't need that. I need more speed. Right. I need to train different qualities. And so in that summer, I split them into a strength group, which is very typical, like mass gainer, a speed, speed and strength. So again, that to me is speed is like point guard, strength is big, and then speed and strength is the hybrid. So I'm really trying to bucket them based off their positions. And really, if they're fascial dominant, that means they're very explosive, very twitchy, lean. So they probably need some functional hypertrophy, right? Yeah. They need some functional hypertrophy to put mass on to withstand the robustness of the season, but I don't want them to get slower. I don't want them to reduce their ballistic, fast dynamic ability. And then the flip side, if I'm a big man, you probably need to move better. That's generally the case. You're strong. You can bench press the house. You can bench press. You can deadlift this. That gives you a lot of confidence. I need you to move better. I need you to be omnidirectional, 360. I need you to have a better reactive strength, because really essentially rebounding is that. Top end concentric strength, because that's what rebounding is as well. And I need you to be able to run the floor. And so I look at it positionally for those. And I start everyone when they come in on a foundational program. Yeah. And over the years, I've learned that they don't need to do 3 months of that. They can do 2 weeks of it, and then they can go join the other group. I had an athlete 2 years ago, insanely strong, and he's telling me this as well. He's like, Coach Matt, come on, man. Like, when can I join the bigs? Come on, this stuff's too easy. All right. Like, well, he needs to tick off this. He needs to tick off like triple extension. We need to riff elevated line, like blah, 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 all these. And I'm like, he's fine. He's strong enough. Like, he's strong enough for a foundation program right now. Let's put him up there. Let's see how he does. Bang. Muscle mass improvements, force plate numbers improvements. He's loving it. I'm good with that. So I think the buckets are great. And I've learned to be kind of less rigid, more flexible with who goes where, and it can be interchangeable. You can be on a more fascial based program, and then I feel like you're getting quicker, you're getting more bouncy, you're moving better, and then okay, I don't use a big man to get too skinny now, so we need to have some
right.
So it can kind of merge from the two. And as a subject expert of your team, that's the beauty of what we do in this industry, is you can essentially make your mind up about all of that.
Yeah, that's one of my things, is I always try and think of models, and not models in the sense of whatever, like necessarily biomechanical movement models. Those are important, but like models of what athletes do you compare yourself to? Who do you play? And especially with like high school and college age kids, like who are your favorite NBA players? Because sure, sometimes the big loves Damian Lillard, right? They love a little point guard that's bombing from the logo. But a lot of times they're like, oh, I got a guy I'm working with right now. He's 6'9". I love Giannis. Of course you love Giannis because you play like him. Your physique's like him. Yeah. So how much of that do you put into this where you're like, hey, who do you model? Whose game do you like? And then try and help them kind of pair their body with the physique or the movement skills that they're looking for.
Yeah, that's a great point. Our director of player development does a really good job with breaking down the athletes, their strengths, their weaknesses, and who he thinks they mirror as a basketball player. And whenever I have freshmen come in, or even just conversations on the floor, who do you like in the NBA? Not just LeBron and Giannis, but who do you want to be like?
Right.
And you can often see that through what they share on social media as well, which is big for some of our guys. Like his explosiveness. Sure. And one of my red shirts absolutely loves him. My red shirt is the ultimate hybrid of the two. He's an unbelievable athlete. He features in a lot of those videos. And I'm like, his dunk ability is crazy. So, okay, that makes sense. Great. I need to keep fueling that. That's his superpower. That's what he wants to be.
Right.
I think a good question to ask them is, would you prefer to jump off one leg or two legs when you're dunking the ball? I think that can give you
that.
Because a single leg jumper with momentum, for me, is more fascial based. They don't need that bend. They can bang, hit the floor. Whereas if you're double leg, even if it's like a left, right bend and come up, you're going to be more on the muscle based, muscle dominant side. So I think that's important to know. Obviously, your testing you can do can help that. But you know, or obviously asking the player, what do you think you are? If I explain the muscle fascia, which I've done on a continuum, what do you think? This is where I think you are. What do you think about that? What NBA player do you want? That's perfect. They're the questions you kind of ask as freshmen when they come in, and even with recruits. Hey, who do you want to be like? How many times are you training a week? And then in our minds, we just go, no, yes, okay, here we go. Let's try this. Oh, it worked. Great. Keep going. And that's where the drop landings come in, which I know we'll talk about, but that was definitely a trial and error experiment. But yeah, it's a great point because they're at this level. I know we're at mid-major,
but
we've got a player in the NBA. Like it's been there. These guys have high aspirations. They are compelled. They're not committed or compliant. They're compelled. So it's our jobs to be like, dude, let's rock. You want to train 6 days a week? I'm here. Let's go.
Let's go.
You
know? Yeah, I love that. I love that. Okay, so I feel like now would be a good time. I didn't really put this in, but I would love to hear, what general KPIs do you like to track? I mean, obviously, we're both Hawking guys, so shout out to them.
Yeah.
I would just love to hear, what are you tracking on a regular basis? What are the things that really stand out to you as these markers tell me if somebody has the ability to play at a high level in the sport of basketball?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'd say this first off, like, I love Hawking Dynamics, but like, force plates aren't a sport. And so everything I think about with, but it's funny because our best athlete, the guy that's in the NBA, he was an average CMJ jumper, average, 4'5". Our best now is 5'7". He's a 4'5". And it's, man. But like when you get him on a drop jump, whew, he's good. When you get him on a drop landing, whew, he's really good. If I did, if I had him now, I'd do the Scandinavian rebound with him. He'd be elite at that. And so I think the metrics I do look at, the KPIs, obviously CMJ, you got jump height, gold standard, time to take off. Those two pair well together. How high are you jumping? How quickly are you doing it? And I, with that, I kind of look at a subjective assessment with that of if they're a stiff flexor, hyperflexor, hip flexor. So that P3 study they did. So what depth did they go down into? Stiff flexor, minimal knee bend, so minimal counter movement depth, quick time to take off, high jump height, boom, fascial driven. Like you're very efficient. If you're a hyperflexor, you're taking long, jump height can still be there, but you're trying to generate that momentum. One of the big things I like to look at, and we do the CMJ rebound, making sure that the metrics are less than 250 milliseconds. So that, you know, qualifies as a fast dynamic test. I like to see the jump height there. I think that's important because that can show you a CMJ isn't really a plyometric. It's like a static jump. The CMJ at least has a secondary component to it. The drop jump, we can progress from the 30 to MRSI. I like, obviously, I think that's better than RSI. I like the MRSI aspect of it. It takes out kind of the flight time.
Yeah.
It's more that time to take off, which I think is important. And then you've got, obviously, when we do we've done some single leg jumps with the guys.
Yeah.
I think the asymmetry is interesting, though, because when I was a football player, I'd always jump off my left leg heading the ball.
For sure.
So my left leg's going to be better. That's not a bad asymmetry. It's probably a beneficial one. So if I saw an asymmetry there when I was testing, I was like, I don't think that's a big issue. And I know someone at Hawking Down, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's big on the asymmetries not being a big deal. And then the last KPIs I would talk about would probably be with the drop landings is that time to stabilization piece, which we think is huge. So peak force, yeah. Time to stabilization. So we've got counter movement jump, CMJ rebound, drop jump, and then the drop landings. The time of stabilization, essentially, how quickly can you get into that statue position? Our best athletes are around 150 to 200 milliseconds. Our more fascial driven hybrids, like boom, kill it dead.
Yeah.
And then our more muscle dominant guys are probably above 250, 250 to 350. It takes them longer to synchronize, takes them longer to be an integrated movement, to balance the proprioceptively break. They might be landing on their toes, then heel. So that to me is a good assessment. And the best thing about that is it can be improved. I've had a muscle dominant guy do that from the start of the summer, and his time to stabilization has gone down and his peak force has gone up. Brilliant. He's able to now essentially land from that height. Peak force is now, we have it where it's 10 to 14 times their body weight. So it's a high stimulus, but it's not often. We do like maybe 6 reps in a session. I'm not trying to give any stress fractures. I'm doing it day after a day off. We're not doing it multiple times a week. And then someone look at peak force, boom, peak deceleration force, quick time to stabilization. So those two, the jump height, the time to take off, the drop jump MRSI, they kind of make up my octagon TSA score, total score of athleticism. So if I have that on the Hawking, that beautiful, I think it's that plot graph, whatever it is. If I have that, which I've done with my red shirts, and I can have their data from June to November and then to March, hopefully I see an expansion of their qualities. And that's what we've seen with our red shirts is they've gone from a TSA score of 50 to 76, a 40 to 66. Great. It's not just a bench press 1RM or trap bar 1RM.
Yeah.
I don't really care about it. I'm looking at so many different factors here. And I want to give the athlete confidence being like, hey, man, you've improved in a lot of stuff. That's amazing. Look at your squat jump height. Look at your drop jump height. Like, man, look at your force you're producing here. Like, they can see the change. And typically that jump height goes up as well. Because if all the other qualities are improved, as Bove talks about, how the phases affect each one, the jump height's going to improve.
Yeah. No, it's so cool. If you're enjoying today's podcast and not already subscribed to the Robertson Training Systems newsletter, what are you waiting for? When you sign up, you'll get immediate access to materials that will help you write better programs, motivate people outside of the gym, and improve how your clients move and feel. Plus, the RTS newsletter is the only place where I announce up-and-coming events like virtual summits, live seminars, and my program design mentorship. And last but not least, I hate spam as much as you do, so I will only email you when I've got something valuable to deliver, something that will make you a better athlete, trainer, or coach. So if you're not already subscribed, head over to robertsontrainingsystems.com and register for our newsletter right now, today. Now, that's enough for me. Let's get back into this week's episode. And one of the things I always talk about, because I've got this broad swath of I call them kids, mostly because I'm old, but like this broad swath of young basketball players that come in, everything from like late 20s, early 30s to like 15 and 16 year old kids. And so one of the things that I'm always trying to preach to them is strength. But this concept of strength for them is just, they think it's just weight room strong, right? I'm bench pressing more, I'm squatting more, I'm trap barring more. And I'm like, look, not that those things aren't important and that we might not chase some of those numbers, but I always come back to the plates and the metrics and the numbers that we can chase there, because I feel like these are so much more relevant to your sport.
So
I always want them to understand all this stuff is great, but it's got to kind of drive us in this direction of things that will actually carry over to the sport of basketball.
Yeah. And bench press, a trap bar, like all those are good general strength qualities. And as those 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds get up to that level, what's an extra 10 pounds on a trap bar deadlift? Because the speed's going to be rubbish. The speed's going to be like, same with the bench press. Like, are we really doing anything here other than like arching your back and hyping it up? And the beauty of the Hawkins is as well, like you test every day. Every jump is a test. Now, if I do a Vertec, which we've done in the past, if I do it at the start of the summer and the end of the summer, it's kind of 50-50 if it improves, truly, because I'm not willing to give up a training session the day before. If we've got legs the day before, we're doing legs. And if it's 6-12-25, we're going to do 6-12-25. So if your legs feel heavy... So I've got it now where we do the Vertec, but we have the force plates in a separate area for that testing day. Because if the Vertec isn't what they want, I'm like, coach, we've got years worth of data and we can see the summers doing this. So don't look at that and him not hitting it as like, he got worse. Yeah, he got worse on the Vertec on 1 point to 2 point. But the force plate data is what I look at every day. And that's the beauty of the system is like they're portable. And the kids, like I say, when they buy into it, you can show them their trends. I mean, there's nothing better for buying there for me.
Yeah. And I always come back to, most of us start off in like a body comp environment, right? Unless you're lucky enough to start with athletes right off the gate. When I was doing a lot of body comp stuff, I'm measuring three things at least. We're measuring scale weight, body fat, and anthropometrics, right? So one of those is always trending down. When somebody first starts getting in the gym, maybe they're not losing weight. Scale's not really moving, but clothes feel better, right? They're losing inches in all the right places. It's the same thing here. Sometimes you just can't predict if the vertex is going to go up. But if I have eight things that I'm tracking and measuring, and six or seven of those eight are going in the right direction, it just greatly increases buy-in. For sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's just the level of detail you want as a practitioner as well, isn't it? It's not like, we'll just do one thing, and then if it doesn't go down, like, oh my gosh, the program didn't work. It's no, I want to find, if it doesn't work, I need to know that. But if it works, like, great reinforcement, great feedback. And with the plates, it's like, boom, peak force, the green arrow goes up. Hey man, you've improved. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Another thing with the vertec is as well, if you put the vertec on the court by a hoop, it's going to be better than if it's in the weight room.
That's
like,
fair.
The logistics of that is, I mean, no, I just, that's not happening. I'll do it one time a year where we do like our spring combine, we'll take it down to the court, but like the weight room and the court are far away. Like that, I'm not going to get training time just so they can get a pretty number. And I just know that rest ultimately just gets that nervous system feeling great. At the end of the summer is a tough time to really do a vertec, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about fascial athletes. And I know this is like a really hot, buzzy term in our industry. You've kind of already described it. And I think we describe it in very similar ways. Generally, it's your one leg jumper. They don't need a lot of flexion, right? Like they're big wind up, big step, boom, they hit and they're in the sky. Mm-hmm. But one thing that's interesting about these kind of athletes is we know, and I've seen a lot of times, these are the ones that have more Achilles issues. They have more ACL issues, right? Because that's part of what makes them great, but it's also, no pun intended, like their Achilles heel.
Yeah.
So what do you find that these guys need? How do you balance their training to kind of find that synergy between performance and health?
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think that's where the art of coaching comes in, with the balancing their superpower. So if an athlete is definitely a fascial-based athlete, I think it's kind of really, maybe they do need more of the generic strength, the general strength, because that's a quality they're missing.
Agreed.
Especially a more fascial-based athlete, they might not be the biggest fan of the weight room, is what I've seen. They might, man, I've got to come in twice a week. So when we're in there, how can we work on that max strength quality to raise that basement, to which will eventually raise the ceiling as well? Like, they'll kind of work together. So raising that max strength. And yeah, I think it's just being aware as well with the Achilles issues, is you're going to want to do some jumps with them because they're so good at it, right?
Yeah.
That's their superpower. Yeah. But I think it's really being aware of the time of the year with that. So in the summer, for me, is not a huge time where I jump the athletes, because they're going to be doing lifting with me. They'll do a 45-minute skill workout, and they'll probably be expected to play pickup twice a week. So I don't really think they need extra jumps in the weight room, especially when they might have a set goal of free throws or three-pointers attempted. So that's a mini jump.
For sure.
Right? It's loading on the Achilles, and we've seen it with some Achilles flare-ups. Nothing serious, but just, hey, Achilles is sore. What happened? Like, we were controlling all this. Coach, I hit 500 threes last night. And you're like, we can't really, you're not going to have that in season. So I think that's really important. And I think their kind of soft tissue maintenance as well is really important. If you're fascially driven, then you kind of need it. You're going to need to get into some soft tissue work. And I think they respond really well to that manual therapy, to red spike ball rolling out the plantar fascia. Like, you just got to be hyper aware that they are essentially a Formula One driver or a car.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to hit a higher output. So if they hit that higher output that you or I wouldn't be able to hit, no offense, they might need longer to recover. They might need longer to recover. Or they might be able to keep doing it, because that's what makes them great. There's some NBA players show, but they might need a bit longer to recover before you tap into that quality again, because them tapping into it is going to be tapping into it way higher than anyone else in your roster. And so I think having an awareness of that, and really just, they're fascial-based athlete, fascially driven. Can you account for how many dunks they do in a day? Probably not. So it's like, I just always err on the side of caution. The really only time I really do jumps, like intensive hurdle jumps with my guys, is probably that October period, right before the season. Everything else is, okay, they're getting enough on the court. If the force plate numbers look good, we're where we need to be.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think of it, anything is, okay, I'm going to use... If I do use jumps, very small, like minimum effective dose, it's more for buy-in. I know they like it. Mm-hmm. So if I let them do something they like, I can probably talk them into doing some stuff they don't like as much.
Yep.
And it buys me some wiggle room. But yeah, I found like one of the biggest things for me is just trying to find ways to help these guys understand like the connection of the dots. I understand like these discussions of, hey, I know this isn't your favorite thing, right? I know maybe you don't love squatting and deadlifting. Yeah. It's the opposite of what you're really good at, but we need enough of this to help keep you healthy so you can go out and do the things that you want to be able to do at a high level. And I think if you have people long enough and they start to realize, because a lot of times, look, if they're not with somebody like you and they just go to a regular like training facility, the first thing that guy sees is a skinny kid or mm-hmm. girl. Let's just get them strong.
Yep.
Let's just make them brutally strong. And we know that doesn't generally play very well. So yep. if you can give them that discussion of, hey, look, I need you to be a little bit stronger. We need to do a little bit of this because it's ultimately going to help you do what you love to do at a high level for a longer period of time. That tends to sit really well. And I feel like that allows you to get those kids to do what you need them to do to stay healthy.
For sure. And I think you can almost break it down further, being like, they could be really strong on the basketball court. They can get in all those angles. They can be one of the strongest guys out there. Like, how is he so quick and explosive? Give a kid credit for like, you're strong there, but we need to build up your robustness and your durability for your overall engine so you can repeat that game after game after game. And I've gone away from over the last 3 years. I haven't back squatted. I'm definitely on the side of single leg work. I'm definitely more on that kind of. And so if we're doing RIF elevated lunges and we've had probably 6 or 7 guys this season hit 102s in each arm. So 205. Oh, wow. Like for, let's say, one rep, I'm like, hey, man. And they feel it's heavy. And they're like, that to me is a way better transfer of training to the game than a compressive. Because that's what most kids hate is, that's really heavy. Man, I feel like I might hurt myself here. You don't feel like you're going to hurt yourself doing dumbbell rear foot or anything like that. So that's been a big change for me as well. Is really kind of meeting them where they're at, like knowing what they need. But like, there's many different ways to skin a cat. And trap bar deadlift for me is the best bilateral derivative I will use with them. It can be high handle, low handle for greater range of motion. It can be split stance. I really don't do a lot of bar on the shoulders kind of compressive loading with any of my guys. And I think they've responded well to it. As long as I give the rationale of why we're doing it, they're the first ones to be like, don't, I'm good. I'm good to not do that. And we still hit those max strength qualities we want. And arguably we hit them greater than a back squat.
Yeah. There's just so many ways to skin that cat. And I've had that discussion numerous times too, because I think, again, so much of this stuff is just ingrained, right? Like they assume, oh, I've got a power clean, or I have to barbell bench press, or I have to barbell back squat. Okay, man, unless you're a competitive power lifter or Olympic lifter, there are no lifts you have to do in the gym. Yep. And when you put it and phrase it like that, they're like, oh, yeah, okay. So now it just comes down to what exercises are best for your body type, what are going to allow you to train the qualities or get the adaptations that we want. We get that. I don't care what exercise we use to get that.
Yeah. And trap bar can do a trap bar clean, like a clean shrug. Yeah. We can do barbell squat jumps, snatch grip jumps. They're my triple extension exercises. And some guys, I've had maybe a couple over the last 6 years that like, Coach Matt, why don't we do Olympic lifting? Like, I really enjoyed doing a hand clean in high school. I said, you know what? That's great to hear. The day before a game, please come in and do it. If you feel like that's what you want to do. And I'll watch it. Yeah. I'll create your technique if I want. But if you feel that gets you, I'll add it into your program. If you really want to do it,
no problem. I love it.
But no issue with that. Let's do that. Let's try it out. We'll try this as well. But if you tell me, that's a good sign. I'm not going to be like, I don't do that. I'm not an Olympic derivative guy. No, I want to do what's best for you. So I want them to have that awareness that they can always tell me like, hey, I feel like I'm getting slower. I feel like I want to put on more size. Hey, when are we going to start doing quicker stuff? When do we start doing jumps? Like, I love all those questions because it shows they're engaged in the process.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so again, broad general question to start. What got you started on the drop landings?
Really good question. I think one of the best ways to learn is to go visit people that are smarter than you. And
agreed.
And I was able to do that with maybe 3 years ago now. I was able to go visit Nick DeMarco at Elon, who I think is very much, he's a football strength coach without necessarily being a football strength coach and I mean that in the nicest possible way. I think he's just so forward thinking. I think he's absolutely brilliant. Highly rate him. So I got to go see him and his guys were doing these drop lands. And I was like, it's so simple, but it's so good. And they were doing all these ISO, overcoming ISOs into the wall as well. So I was like, boom, I've got two things there to absolutely take home and use. So I started doing it with athlete A in that Sportsmith article. I actually got it where athlete A is probably like 5'8". Probably got to him doing a box here. I had to hold the box. But such an easy transfer of, hey, think of you sprinting down the court, you got to suddenly break and go up for the layup. That happens a lot. You're sprinting into the court, got to pivot and kick with two. This is what we're trying to replicate. Oh, makes sense. So I started seeing that. And then I actually saw Joey G at FAU do them on Twitter one time. But the thing with he had was like, he was doing it, say my max vertical was 42. He would do them dropping from 42. And I felt like that was good. But the athletes in the video were like, I mean, it was easy. It was like,
yeah.
And so I was like, okay, let me try it with a couple of my studs this start of this summer and start it here and start to use the force plates. The first time I put the force plates underneath them. So obviously it's logistical. Force plate testing, CMJs, like getting the box up. So I started with 42. After 2 weeks, 46, 52, 58. I think my math's right. And then like 64. Maybe I've got that wrong. Anyway, we did it from those heights, 2 weeks. And the position improved. The peak force numbers went up, the higher the boxes went up because they had to generate more force to break. And Absolutely. Really my best athletes, I would do them at 72 and above if I could. Oh my gosh. Because 66, even 66 inches and guys holding on, a couple of my best athletes would just be like, they wouldn't hit the plates hard. They'd get 8,000-9,000 peak force. I'm like, that's not what the exercise in my mind is, like 10,000-11,000. Like you're hitting that hard. Now I understand body mass comes into it. So my bigs that weigh 220, they would get the 11,000. Okay, so it's all relative, right? But I was like, if you didn't have a game in 2 days, I'd go 72. And I'd say, hey, mate, hit that hard and you'll feel that thing. Like, you'll feel that stimulus. And so it was kind of Nick. And then it was seeing Joey do it. It was having me experiment with it a little bit. And then, I don't know, being not like I didn't think it was a fad. So I was like, let me try this out. Let me test it. And one of the beautiful things I saw was the breaking force improvement in their CMJ. So the breaking there, and then they do the CMJ and like their position would be shallow. So really small depth, time to take off would improve. And their force plate numbers were doing a lot of good stuff compared to everyone else in my team. Their force plate numbers were doing this and everyone else was, and I had them more of on a fascial based program. So less kind of contractile work, more connective tissue, full body work. And so I was like, okay. And then, so when we come back from the summer, I had everyone do them. I said, we're going to start with 42s. There was other guys carried on there. Everyone 42, 48, 54, 60, 66. There we go. I got my math right. That's what we did with those guys. And again, the transfer was good. And then they became a staple in-season training stimulus for us.
I love it. I love it. So with that being said, what KPIs are you tracking in that? What are the metrics? I know you talked about time to stabilization. Yep. Are you looking at the depth that they're landing at? Let's just start there. And then I want to talk a little bit about implementation because somebody's going to listen to this and think about how do I start this in my program? But let's just start with KPIs and we'll talk
implementation. Yeah. So you try and coach them to land like a statue and to land high. So we want to get rid of that mindset of be safe, deep flexion. That's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to land stiff. We're trying to create high ground fraction force. We're trying to create high peak force. And you're trying to do it in essentially the quickest time possible. So that's where the time of stabilization comes in. So they're the two ones I look at. And generally, like I say, those more muscle dominant guys would be high in peak force, but they'd be high in time of stabilization. The beauty would be peak force, time of stabilization high, peak force, time of stabilization low. And so that's really the two metrics we look at. But also there's the subjective look at it. I can be coaching guys and I can, my assistant Justin takes them, coach them on the plate, and I can look over and I can see their position when they land. And ideally, and we film this as part of our fascia mechanics course I'm doing with Danny Foley. We film them and we screen grab the picture of them doing a CMJ, a drop jump, a drop landing, and a CMJ rebound. And we saw the position in each of those at zero velocity. And really the best athletes had the same position. It was shallow. It was kind of slight flexion. And then the athletes that really have more muscle dominance and more like energy leaks and more needing of that training, all over the place. Butt was down, hips were forward. And so it was time of stabilization, peak force, but also filming it. And maybe even if I film it on my phone, I say, hey, dude, you got to hit this hard. Like, look at how you're bending here. Like, trust me, you're safe. You're a beast. This is 54 inches. Go hit that thing. And shout out to Sorinex because they had the triphasic bars. So the guys were able to like kind of climb up the boxes, hold on to the bars, two guys on the side, and then land. Yeah. And we had obviously the pad around the plates, as you saw from that video that obviously was pretty cool. And I think they kind of do enjoy it. They're like, oh man, like Coach Matt, like we're not going up higher than this because they're scared of heights. But I'm also fully aware that I'm not trying to give them anything that's going to, I want good vibes. I want good mojo. I want great training intent. I'm not trying to make it where they're like, I'm not doing this. This is crazy. Like it's on that borderline, but we're not quite crazy.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. Okay. So now talk to me about implementation because again, somebody's going to listen and think this sounds like so legit. I want to try it. Where do they start? Because obviously you're probably not going to go in and try and do 30 drop landings the first day out, or at least I hope you're not. So give us some guidance there, like where you would start or where you started, either way.
Yeah, I'd say where I started, I read a really good article on Sportsmith by Danny Lum, which was kind of looking at that soft landing and stiff landing. I'd say that's a really good article to look at because I can give you kind of reps and sets and can kind of build you up as a foundation. And then I would say you could try it out on yourself to see how it feels. That's not something I personally did. I trusted my athletes to do it, but I would start small. Start with, I don't think 20, if you're a college basketball Division I athlete, I think you can start at 36 inches. I don't think you need to start at 24. 24 is like, all right, what are we doing here? That's essentially you like stepping down a step, literally. And we do way more force than that in the game. So I think 36, right. Killing it high, coaching them up on that. Obviously, if there's any contraindications, don't do it. And then try and slowly build that up. Like I say, we did it 2 weeks at different height, went up 6 inches, 2 weeks, 6 inches. And the reps would be 6 reps a session. So I do a land, you do a land, I do a land, and then I do my other 2 exercises in the A series. I go back to the drop. Okay. So there would be very low reps because it's an intense exercise. It's super, it's taxing on the nervous system. It's obviously high ground reaction force, not trying to give any stress fracture issues. If there's any issue with the player's foot or ankle, hey man, don't worry about it. Let's do a different one. The progression can be obviously single leg drop lands. And we've done that with a couple of our red shirts. And we got up to, I think, 48 or 54 inches with the single leg lands. Again, that's going to take time. That's going to really take time. For sure. You're going to want to do 24 inches soft land. Not too much valgus, like you don't need to have your hips super low, but just bend and then really try and absorb it quick and you'll see a difference between, but that really helps with time to stabilization. Talk about asymmetry and left leg or right leg dominance. That's a really good, because you've got the time to stabilization, you've got the peak breaking force, single leg now. Anytime you can get single leg as opposed to double leg, I just feel like the gains are just going to go through the roof because your body's going to have to be like, what is this stimulus? So single leg is a progression, but that's, I would say that's definitely very advanced.
I love it. Okay. One more topic I want to touch on before we start wrapping this up is this idea of wearable resistance, right? Talk to me about wearable resistance. What is it? Why are you incorporating it? Just let's start there and see where it goes.
Great question. I feel like it's such a low hanging fruit. Essentially, you're wearing either Morpho tights, which is, you know, micro weights on a vest or leggings, or the Exergen product, which is from Leela, where it's like calf sleeves, quad sleeves, whatever top. I've used them various different ways. I was actually give it credit to Stefan Jones. He kind of mentioned him using the Exergen product with his cricketers, and he is just a brilliant mind. So whenever Danny and I spoke to him, it was like, oh yeah, like that makes complete sense. Especially if Stefan's using it and says it, like I'm on that. So I bought a couple there, started using it with my red shirts on their game day workouts. I would use the Amorpho because I want to simulate every game movement. We're talking about transfer of training, sport-specific training. Why don't we add progressive resistance and load to their sport-specific movements? Instead of trying to create a big pre-breaking force to help deceleration, why not add load to their deceleration? And so that was something that was kind of cool to see and to give them the gear, and it's comfy. The guys like it. And then the Exergen product was more in the weight room. I could really target the lower leg. So if we do any pogo jumps, DC block stiffness jumps, anything that's really kind of more ankle dominant, let's try and load that area and see if that's more impressive and can have a better transfer of training effect than a barbell on the shoulders or dumbbells in the hand or a weight vest. Can we make that more great, like, and have 200 grams, 300 grams, 400 grams, 500 grams around the calves? Have it high, have it all low, depending on the angle and how far away it is from the actual area working, to see if that's a greater stimulus. And the guys loved it. I've used it with my red shirts this year. I think it's a really good tool in the toolbox. I don't think it will replace anything like a big traditional lift, but I really think if we're trying to get in the nuances of that 1% and trying to really improve transfer of training and sport-specific training, I think it makes just too much sense for me to not do. And the guys love it. And it's fun to see them. They're doing a skill workout. It's 30 minutes in. And they're dunking the ball. They've got a Morpho top on, a Morpho leggings on. Okay, I know that's going to help because that's heavy now. They've got sweat on it. It's heavy. So essentially, when you take that off, it's no different doing a green band resistant sprint. I'm pulling you. You go, I take that band off, man. You're going to feel quicker. This is the exact premise of what we do in the weight room with any resistance training. Yeah, I don't think it's a fad. I think it's good. I hope it doesn't get gimmicked. I hope it's not, oh yeah, use this for everything. We don't wear it the whole weight session. I really am specific with how I use it. If they've done it in the A series, okay, take the calf sleeves off. Now we're going to do RIF elevated lunge. Like, we don't need to wear it for the whole session, but I do think it can have a big play. And across all sports, I think it's where coaches can get super creative with what they want to do, what their athletes need. Stefan with cricket. I mean, I'm thinking like javelin. I'm thinking like quarterbacks. I'm thinking like soccer players. Yeah. I'm thinking, you name the sport, I think it can have a really big impact when used appropriately.
Like, here's something I always come back to as well. The longer somebody trains, doesn't matter, respective of sport. First off, all athletes, the real sport for them is the sport. It's not the weight room. So we always have to remember that, because we are all endeared to the weight room. We love the weight room, but we have to find ways to keep things engaging. And the longer somebody plays their sport, the longer they're in a weight room. Sometimes it's just, it's not novelty for novelty's sake, but like those little things, right? So like when we introduce the flywheel, we use an extra fly. Having the flywheel in the gym. Now, granted, there's some benefits to that sort of stimulus, but also just the fact that they're not holding kettlebells or barbells or dumbbells. It's, oh, new stimulus, higher training intent, more focus, more engagement, better results. And so I think there's something to that too, right? Like just giving the athletes something different to work through that's engaging and that will get them to train a little bit harder.
100%. And especially, I've been here 6 years. I've trained some guys for multiple years. I want each summer to look a bit different. I want to have some factor of what's been good. But like last year, we added in manual eccentric overload sets, which I think was brilliant. Yep. My buddy at Charleston, Eli Foy, kind of told me about him. Brilliant. Like that's a great overload for my bigs. And then the fascial-based training came in. And then the drop landings came in. And now the wearable resistance. And I'm trying different tests on the force plate. And I think as long as I know I can keep refining and not keep adding as well, like I don't need to keep looking at all these tests. Like if I refine and I can just have all these different like arrows to my bow, okay, what one do we need now? If an athlete says this, what direction we go? I think it just enhances your skill set as a practitioner and coach. And then you might have an athlete that's like, oh, he's a bit of an outlier. Why don't we try this? And like another example, we use tsunami bars for the first time this October as part of our French martial arts method. And I was like, we've had them in the closet for a while. And I've been stubborn to be like, not using them because I've got to use them. And I'm like, oh, this could be a great additional stimulus. And the guys are going to know it's different. That thing feels different to a barbell. And let's add it in. We added it in. It was great. Now, have I used them since October? No, because we've been in season. Will I use them in the summer? Right. Maybe not. But will I use them next October? Absolutely. And I think finding tools that work at different stages of the year can really benefit performance as well, because you just know that it works. And the qualities you're trying to get. Yeah, I do think novelty helps. It's just, I tell my guys, send me any social media stuff you see. I'd rather see, because I don't want it to be gimmicky. I don't want it to be a barbell squat, a Bosu ball with offset resistance and someone pushing you.
Right.
Send me everything you see, because then we can talk about it. And if I feel it's good, then you've helped me as a practitioner, because you've shown me something I haven't seen. Sure. And you're going to have buy-in with it, because Anthony Edwards does it for Timberwolves and it looks really cool. Let's do it. Let's try it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, man, big question time. If you could give young Matt Aldred one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, man. Gosh, that's a great bit of advice. I would say listen more. Listen more. Especially, I think I've had a transition in life of being out here, obviously being a husband, being a dad now. Just listen more. I think there's so much to learn. Listen, I'd probably say read more as well. Listen more and read more.
I love it. I love it. Okay, last but not least, lightning round. Four fairly short questions. Your answers can be as long or short as you like. Number one, again, I think I mentioned this up top, but you are a new dad. Have you learned any lessons in your first few weeks of being a dad?
It's hard. It's seriously hard.
It is hard,
I didn't think I'd understand how hard it was, but I've never really been an anxious person. But like that first night when Lucy was at home, like, whew, nerve-wracking, anxious. I think being quick to say sorry is important. If I have lack of sleep, like being quick to say sorry to my wife is, I mean, that's just key. I think that's really helped us. Yeah. It's good communication. So that's the lesson I've taken there. And cherishing like a 3 a.m. nighttime feed, because it's actually quite a beautiful thing when it's at night and you're tired, but you're feeding your door. It's pretty cool.
It's amazing. Yeah. One thing I always try and remember is they will never be this age again. So you find ways to enjoy their ups and downs, but you always enjoy those individual moments, right? Mm-hmm. That's cool. Mm-hmm. You're on a fun path, my friend.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's exciting.
It's exciting, man. I love that little one. So just trying to do right by her and just try and be a good husband, dad, and hope I'm half decent at my job as well, which keeps us in a good spot.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. Number two, what was your favorite city to visit when you played soccer?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd say LA.
Sorry,
LA. When we played, the team was the LA Blues, and we played, I think it was at Cal State Fullerton, and we were there for a week because there was no point in us going from, I think it was like Dayton back to Antigua. So we stayed in LA for a week, and that was cool. Santa Monica, like all that stuff, walking around the place, Hollywood. Yeah, I'd say LA, just because as an English guy, like California's kind of got this aura about it. So it was cool to be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Number three, I know you're a big nature guy. What is like your favorite spot to go hiking or hang out? What's your favorite there?
Yeah, the Seven Sisters National Park in my hometown of Eastbourne, England. It's essentially seven cliffs, the edge of England. Okay. You keep looking out, you've got France. So the Seven Sisters cliffs, I'll send you a pic of it. I mean, just beautiful. And it just reminds me of being home. My mum loves to walk. So we go on 2-3 hour walks. You talk a lot. It's quiet. Like, it's just, yeah, I just love it. And even to this day, like, I love going to state parks. I love taking my dogs for a walk. Like, I think there's something about just being in nature, being still. It can kind of reset you. And it's just beautiful. I love being outside. And that's definitely my favorite place is back home.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, last but not least, what's next for Matt Aldred? What are you working on? What are you excited about? Anything? Did you mention a course?
Yeah.
I love courses.
Yeah. Danny Foley, who is a brilliant mind with everything fascial based and even just human performance. You two would have a great conversation. We're doing a fascial mechanics course, and it's going to be released mid-April. And it's essentially looking to try and quantify if someone's a fascial based, muscle based athlete and how we can best train them. So a lot of the conversation we had today, and then obviously looking at a lot of concepts around fascia, return to play, in-season training. How do we define archetypes different to just like mesomorph, ectomorph, endomorph, wingspan? How can we dive deep? A lot of the stuff we spoke about today. So that's what's next for us, is kind of really the fascia mechanics course. Super excited about that. And then just trying to keep refining the process here at Furman. Love what we do. Have great relationships with different technology companies. Hawkins, Connexon. We've kind of produced like an AMS for ourselves with help with the buddy. So we've got a Power BI. I'm just trying to, I know I heard a quote from, I think it was the guy at Villanova football, I can't remember his name, but he shared something super fast, be dangerous at everything. So I'm trying to do that in a humble way, of course, and just keep trying to move the needle in every different aspect of our job.
I love it. I love it. Matt, this has been amazing, dude. I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, you got so much going on in your life right now. So I appreciate you taking the time. Where can my listeners find out more about you and the great work that you're doing?
Yeah, I'm sharing a lot of stuff these days on Instagram. So SC_Aldred is probably the one. Twitter less. But yeah, I really enjoyed sharing my thought process on things on Instagram. So I don't just want to post a video. I never really post videos of me training. Not that's a bad thing. That's not what I do.
Yeah.
But I really like sharing kind of different things we're trying out, different things I think work, because I feel like we work at a university and we should be educators. And I think social media is a great way to educate. I'm not saying I know all the answers, but if I see something that works, I think I should share it. I've taken a lot from a lot of people. It's time to give. So yeah, my Instagram is probably the best place for people to reach and follow along professionally and personally, I'd say.
I love it. I love it. I'll make sure I get the links in the show notes. And Matt, again, dude, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. I appreciate that. And we'll talk soon.
All right, my friends, that does it for this week's episode with Matt Aldred. Really hope you enjoyed it. This is such a fun show. I really, really enjoy these episodes where there's a lot of back and forth. Obviously, we're talking basketball, so that helps. But just the different buckets that he uses, they're very similar to what I'm using at the gym. I love talking about these fascially driven athletes because you get a lot of them in basketball, and it's not just improving their performance, but you know, how do you get them to do what you need them to do in the weight room? How do you keep them healthy? Because there are a lot of injury issues that come along with that territory. So love talking about that. And I love the drop landings. I just think that's such a unique topic. It's not something that I've driven into a bunch myself. But man, I think there's a lot of utility there. And I'm keen to start implementing it in small doses with my athletes and see what kind of changes we can make. So really hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you did, small favor to ask, if you're not already subscribed to the show or following the show, whatever we call it these days, take 2 seconds out of your day and do that right now. Whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Podcasts, whatever platform you prefer, go there right now and hit the subscribe button so you know each and every week when a new episode drops. So my friend, as always, thank you so much for your support. Love and appreciate you. And we'll be back next week with our next episode. Take care.